when the New Testament writers talk about keeping God's commandments, which commandments do they mean?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
It is a joy to be with you today on The Line of Fire. Michael Brown, thank you so much for joining us. It is Friday, which means you've got questions, we've got answers. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I just want to make an exception today to our normal rule. We normally have Jewish-related, Israel-related questions on Thursdays, and of course, we had some very powerful interviews yesterday. The first hour, I interviewed Pastor Ray Bentley, who works actively with Israelis and Palestinians. The second hour, I interviewed Reverend Alex Awad, a Palestinian Christian, who has a very different perspective than I do on the Middle East conflict. That's why I wanted him on the air. And you can listen to those by going to my website, askdrbrown.org, and clicking on latest audio. But I want to make an exception to our normal rule and say that if you have questions that directly relate to Israel's conflict with Hamas, if you want to take issue with my position, then we'll take calls on Israel-related subjects as well. 866-348-7884. Anything I can help you with, any area where you're trying to work through scripture, practical ministry issue, something going on in your home congregation, you're concerned about the moral, spiritual state of America, you want to talk about that, the phone lines are open. You've got questions. We've got answers. 866-348-7884. Before I get into your questions, your e-questions, and your calls, if you have not heard, the Sudanese Christian woman Miriam Ibrahim, who was sentenced to 100 lashes and death, who was forced to give birth to her second child in prison, apparently in chains. What was her crime? Well, having been raised by a Christian mother, but legally, according to Sudanese law, being Muslim because of having a Muslim father, she committed the horrific crime of following Christianity and marrying a Christian man, in which case she was now considered to be an adulteress by Islamic law because her marriage was not recognized. Anyway, thankfully, an international outcry was able to get her free. She and her husband and two children had been holed up in the U.S. Embassy in Sudan, and on short notice, she was able to get out and made her way to Italy. It's certainly good news, but let's remember how many others are suffering for their faith around the world. Look, I've said it many times, I'll say it again. Brothers and sisters in Jesus, followers of Jesus around the world, are literally losing their lives for the faith. Every year when I go to India, now 21 times, going on 22, God willing, in December, we do water baptisms, and my friend Yesu Padam, who does the water baptisms, asks the folks in Telugu, in the language of Andhra Pradesh, if they are willing to follow Jesus to their last drop of blood, to their very last breath. In other words, they know that there could be persecution as a Hindu converting to follow Jesus or from another religion converting to follow Jesus. And they understand that baptism, in a sense, seals the deal. It makes a public statement on a very clear and broad level. So he asked them, when they're getting baptized, about the seriousness of their commitment. Now, already they have spoken about that plainly and privately. And after the water baptisms, they all go and spend a protracted period of time, little children, elderly, just getting alone with God, quietly with others, seeking the Lord about the major thing they've just done. I mean, it's a major event. But they're asked at baptism if they're willing to die for Jesus. We think it's a big deal when someone unlikes us or unfriends us on Facebook. Come on, time to stand up and be strong. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire. You've got questions, we've got answers. I'm hoping that sometime in the next 20 minutes or so, I'll be able to read a letter to you. It was published on the Allgemeiner Journal, Jewish newspaper, Jewish publication here online. And it is a letter of thanks from Hamas to the international media. Oh, of course, Hamas did not write it themselves, but it really does get the point across. And again, such an important issue that we're dealing with. Let's continue to pray for God's merciful intervention on Israelis and Palestinians alike. If you can consider this, 866-348-7884, and I'll be getting to your calls and e-questions shortly. If you consider this, 32 Israeli casualties in the war against Hamas in 17 days. Now, I've read articles. People have posted on Facebook. Well, it's only, you know, look at the numbers. They're tiny compared to the casualties of the Palestinians, as if it's got to be, if you're being terrorized and attacked, that the only way it's fair to fight back is if you sustain about equal losses. I'm reading that all the time. That's why I wrote an article a year or two ago called Not Enough Dead Jews. You don't get world sympathy unless there are more dead Jews, sad to say. But to give you a figure here, and it's absolutely tragic to read about the casualties among the Palestinians. Let me say it again. Arab blood is just as precious as Jewish blood. It's just as tragic when a Palestinian kid dies as an Israeli kid dies. Absolutely, 100%, unqualifiedly. 32 Israeli casualties in 17 days of war. If you compute that to American population, that would be the loss of 1,320 American soldiers in 17 days of fighting terrorism. Can you imagine how staggering that would be for us as a nation? Now, when you now look at the Palestinian casualties, 600, 700, 800, many of them civilians, and I lay the blame for that squarely at the feet of Hamas. Every time there's an opportunity for a ceasefire and to step back, what happens? Another attack, another attack, another attack, another attack on Israel. And in ways that they know will endanger their own civilians, which has been a part of the strategy from day one, because Hamas knew that they could not win. They could not win a military conflict with Israel. The goal is to win a media conflict with Israel. So Israel comes out looking as the bad guy, the bully again. So those casualties, those numbers are totally daunting if you do the same thing, comparison of population for the Palestinians. I'm looking at an article, though, by J.J. Goldberg on theforward.com. And as a Jew, if I'm correct, I've read previous articles of his that have been critical of Israel. But it's interesting that he writes, for peace to win, Hamas must lose. For peace to win, Hamas must lose. As I've said repeatedly, the greatest victims of Hamas are the Palestinian people themselves. Even if they put Hamas in power, they are still the greatest victims. One more comment about Israel, then I'm going to go to the phones. And of course, there have been riots in the West Bank now, riots with thousands and thousands of Palestinians in solidarity with their Palestinian brethren in Gaza, rallying against Israel. But I just want to point this out. I think I'm going to post this on Facebook in a little while. My friend Eddie Santoro from Israel made this comment, he and his wife Jackie, serving in Israel for many years now. It is sad to note that the millions of tons of cement and steel that Israel allowed into Gaza over the years did not go to the homes and apartments they said they were building, but to these attack tunnels. As always, Hamas has chosen war and death over the humanitarian needs of its people. And as always, even though Israel had loudly complained that the cement was not being used for civilian purposes, the world forced them to allow these shipments to continue. Most of the deaths to date in this war have been connected to the discovery and destruction of these tunnels. And friends, I actually had to post this on Facebook. last night. And our Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page is getting flooded like never before. This last 7 days, we've reached over 5.5 million people through that page. We've had 500,000 people actively engaged. We've had over 48,000 comments posted. Yeah, I know that you just click on a page and it tells you all this. We're not tracking it, obviously. But I actually had to post this saying, listen, we welcome discussion. We welcome healthy interaction. We welcome dissent. Absolutely fine. Go for it. We welcome that. That's why I have talk radio as opposed to just a teaching program so that we can interact. But I had to add this. Anyone using profanity, vile speech, or engaging in personal attacks will be blocked as soon as we spot the post. That's an ongoing policy we've had. But I had to add this. When it comes to Israel's war with Hamas, those accusing Israel of genocide or of being like Hitler and the like, or those celebrating Hamas's terrorist attacks on Jews or celebrating the killing of innocent Palestinians will also be blocked. There are plenty of other places where anti-Israel lies and anti-Semitism and profanity and hate speech are tolerated, but our social media platform is not one of them. I actually had to post that because of some of the vile stuff coming in. All right, 866-34-TRUTH. You've got questions. We've got answers to the phone with our friend Jonathan in Alberta, Canada. How you doing today?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you, sir.
I know you've dealt with divorce and stuff before, but I think my question is just a little different from what I've heard being asked. So just to give you a bit of background, my sister, she grew up in a Christian home, got married when she was 18, and they had a good Christian marriage for 10 years. And then she had an affair with another man that was married within the church. And so they took off together, and they lived together for the next 2 years. And while they're living together for those next 2 years, they were going to church and all the rest of it. And I did approach her at that time. And when the relationship started getting abusive, then she left, and she's now with another guy that she has been with for 2 years and still going to church, but I think they're living together. And so in September, she's wanting to get married again for the second time. And so I'm just wondering how to deal with having her committed adultery, press for the divorce, and looking to remarry.
Right. So as far as you know, the whole time she's claimed to be a follower of Jesus.
Yes.
All right. And there's no dispute that she committed adultery and then she pressed for divorce.
Oh, yeah, that's quite clear.
Did she divorce her husband or did he divorce her?
He actually, for the next year, wanted reconciliation, and she was the one that pressed for the divorce.
Got it. All right. So then she was with the guy she had an affair with. That relationship got abusive. Now she's with another man. Does he also claim to be a follower of Jesus?
Yeah, they're going to church together and at the same time.
Got it. Now, does she claim that she repented of her adultery? Has she acknowledged that, claimed she repented of it, and that God's giving her another chance? What's her position?
I haven't really pressed her on that. I know while she was in the affair, I had asked her, I said, you know, I can't have you doing both, being in an adulterous affair and going to church at the same time. And she was at that time hostile about the whole thing. And so I haven't asked her about the repentance part now.
Okay, and she's never sought to reconcile with her first husband.
He has gone on now and remarried.
Yeah. Obviously, we always want to look for God's mercy. In other words, if she terribly blew it, committed adultery, sinned against her husband, pushed him to divorce, now he has since gone on and remarried, which I believe scripturally he could. I have friends that say you can never remarry as long as the original spouse is living. But I believe he would have had grounds to remarry. Let's say she repents, reconciliation is impossible. Could it be that God could grant mercy and say that she could marry again. That's debatable. People are going to come down on all different sides of Scripture on that. But what I would say is this. She has, you have to do what you feel is right in your conscience. If reaching out to her as a sister is more important than, quote, taking a righteousness stand here. But in this case, if she has never clearly repented of her adultery and destroying the marriage and has gone on living in adultery and now started up another relationship in church the whole time, I would personally not be able to go to that wedding unless there had been clear repentance. With pastoral counseling and leadership, the possibility of a new life and a new marriage had clearly been agreed on. That'd be my own take, personally.
Give us strength to always do what's right.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. You've got questions. We've got answers. Let me respond to this question from Mike. Dr. Brown, I want to serve and obey God, but when I see verses in the New Testament pertaining to keeping the commandments, I'm confused what commandments are being spoken of in John 14:15. If you love me, keep my commandments. 1 Corinthians 7:19, circumcision is nothing. And uncircumcision is nothing but the keeping of the commandments of God. 1 John 2:3, hereby do we know that we know him if we keep his commandments. Repeated similarly in 1 John 5:3, Revelation 14:12, here is the patience of the saints, here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus, similar to Revelation 22:14. Are these verses pertaining to different types of commandments, 10 commandments, Levitical commandments, Jesus commandments, others? Thank you for your time and ministry. Great question, one that comes up a lot, one that we'll probably have a radio debate on with someone who says that the law of Moses, as much as possible, should be kept by all believers, Jewish and Gentile alike. In short, it is 100% clear that the New Testament does not mandate the keeping of the law of Moses and all of the commandments that could be kept for all believers, which would include, for men, circumcision, which would include many other laws that the New Testament clearly does not lay on all Gentile believers. Not simply as a matter of justification, but simply saying God did not give this to you. That's why there's a warning in Colossians 2, not to be pressured to keep Sabbath or new moons or other things like that. The substance is in the Messiah. The shadow may be in the law. The substance is in the Messiah. So what then are the commandments? The Ten Commandments? No, there's no indication you get in the New Testament that these are singled out as the Ten Commandments, and that's what everyone had to keep. So what would it be? It would be whatever Jesus taught. If you love me, you keep my commandments. Love one another, take up your cross, follow me. The many other commandments that Jesus gave. So you say, but he said he didn't come to abolish the law, but to fulfill. Yes, so look at how he fulfilled. Look at what he taught, and take that, live by that. And then as you go through the rest of the letters in the New Testament, you'll see, for example, in 1 Thessalonians 4, Paul references the commandments, the strong exhortations, the words of precept that Paul had given them. So a very, very simple principle would be the commandments of Jesus and those teachings that are reiterated in the New Testament for all believers. If you live by them, that will be evidence of the new birth, and that will be part of the fruit that you bear in the Spirit, a new life, a transformed life. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee. Justin, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. Thanks for taking my call. I had a quick question for you. I come from a different background. You and I met briefly, and I don't expect you to remember a whole lot, but I come from a background of abuse and drugs and all that kind of stuff.
I got it. I remember.
Yeah, okay.
I do remember. just because you phrased it that I wouldn't. I remember.
Gotcha.
Got
okay.
It.
Yeah. Well, hopefully in the future I'll be remembered for other things. But
okay.
At any rate, I have this dear friend of mine, and we're active and working out together and things like that. He comes from a completely different background where he had a perfect upbringing, And he saw the religiosity, the whitewashed sort of culture of, you know, Southern Christianity, and where a teen would get pregnant, they'd get pushed off to the side. He never see people restored from their sin, things like that. So he has this sort of hang up, and I'm not really sure how to communicate with him. I don't know if there's a book. I thought about giving him, you know, Go and Sin No More, just sort of the nature of, you know, God wanting to draw us out of that to relationship. And so I was just wondering if you had any input on that, or maybe there's like a good book, you know, maybe on that subject.
Well, I think that Go and Sin No More can be helpful in terms of the larger issues it addresses, and also the call to intimacy with God. But, you know, the fact is, even though we have different backgrounds, there are certain universal truths that apply to all of us. And if we get those universal truths right, we're blessed. And if we get them wrong, we suffer loss. Perhaps, do you feel that his big issue is lack of a relationship with God or intimacy with God, and more of a legalistic approach?
Well, he's just really turned off from the culture. And so we live close to, you know, Brentwood, Franklin, Tennessee. Everyone's very affluent in church, things of that nature. And he doesn't see a lot of application within the church. He sees people kind of being outliers, so to speak, and it just turns him off from it. But he believes in God, and wants to believe in God. And, you know, we were discussing actually this morning, I told him how I was freed from pornography and things like that. He's like, man, I struggle with that too. And he said, you know, I cried out to God to deliver me from that. And, you know, he didn't deliver on that. And I kind of tried to explain to him my experience with it. And so he really is trying to and really wanting to, but feels like when things go well, it's really because of his efforts, and isn't really sure that God, you know, kind of in the business of responding to him, I guess.
Got it, right. So developing that deeper personal relationship is obviously essential. Tell you what, since I do know who you are, and I do know that Matt, my producer, has been in touch with you on some other issues, let me think of another book that might work well, and then Matt will shoot you an email. Obviously, we can't do this for everyone, but because we've been in touch, and I do remember meeting you and one of your kids, your son, when I spoke in Tennessee a few months back. So let me reflect on that, and then we will shoot you something that hopefully will be relevant. All right, thanks for the call. Hey, friends, when you have a moment, go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, and click on latest video. Latest video, all right? And now, if you missed my video correcting Bill O'Reilly's bad theology, that's getting a lot of attention. You can watch that. If you missed my video calling out PLO spokesperson on CNN, obviously you can watch that. But we posted two more videos in the last 24 hours. One, these are all from the radio broadcast, where I address anti-Christian sentiments in the NFL, in particular with some ESPN journalists. And then another where we play the clip where callers challenging my views on religious discrimination. You can listen to those, watch those on our YouTube channel. And friends, if you've not yet taken advantage of a very special resource offer, three critically important DVDs on Israel, on the Middle East conflict, on the history of the land, debates with others about who is Israel today, $25 postage paid. Great material, super eye-opening, super practical, especially with all the confusion swirling in the body today. To order, call 1-800-278-9978. Last day to do this. It's a good savings on the retail value as well. 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978. Or go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. You can order right there. Jesus is Lord. Rest in that. Rest in that.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Save the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire. You've got questions, we've got answers. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the phones. Chuck in Frederick, Virginia. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. Thank you for taking the time to answer this question. I had recently got a book called Our Harsh Logic, which is written about, and I think they say by members, brave men and women of the IDF. And I just wanted to get your opinion on it.
Yeah, I'm not intimately familiar with this book. I've looked at websites where some of the testimonies from the Israeli soldiers are very much disputed, and you know, are they accurate and they're unnamed, etc. This again, for those not familiar, the book "Our Harsh Logic: Israeli Soldiers' Testimonies from the Occupied Territories 2000 to 2010." So the title itself is telling you that the viewpoint is that these are occupied territories, so that Israel is an occupier and has no right to be there. Again, the only reason Israel has any of this territory was in its war for survival. When being attacked by hostile nations or about to be attacked by hostile nations, they had to defend themselves. That's the only reason they have any of this territory. In the past, they've given land back if there was any hope of peace. And in fact, just turning Gaza over to the Palestinians completely, as a result, Hamas comes in power, and Israel has had an average of 3.5 rockets shot at it every single day since Hamas came into power, on average. So you're talking about thousands and thousands and thousands of rockets. That being said, I have no question that Israel is far from guiltless. In other words, that you are going to have, look, we see things with our police forces in America, and you'll now get it captured on YouTube, where somebody uses unnecessary force, or somebody kills somebody trying to restrain them, or some cop beating up some handcuffed man or woman. We see these things. We know that the great majority of police are trying to enforce the law and trying to do the right thing. And we know there are some, unjustifiably, whatever the case is, that act in wrong ways. And I'm sure if you have enough interviews, you'll hear some of them talking about people they're dealing with or places where they work in harsh and negative terms. So I don't doubt that there are true testimonies of Israeli soldiers speaking about bad attitudes towards the Palestinians, speaking hatefully of Palestinians, talking about treating the Palestinians wrongly or harshly. I don't doubt that that exists. Do I believe it's the norm? No, of course not. And in point of fact, I was just reading the words of a British general who had fought in Afghanistan and said, listen, there is no army in the world, anywhere in the world, that goes out of its way more to protect civilians than the Israeli army. And as Nancy and I were talking about this last night, because in our household, Israel is far from guiltless. In other words, we can talk about the sins of our own people and the shortcomings of our own people. But I was saying, you know, I know so many people who've served in the IDF, and then parents of kids who've served in the IDF, and they all tell me the identical story, how dangerous it is because they have to constantly try to protect the lives of civilians. And constantly, the things they have to do, the first training they get the opening weeks is training in ethics. And they are not allowed to leave base without two things, their ID and their ethics card that talks about how they have to treat others. I mean, tell me another army that operates like that. So no question that there are injustices and certain things that can be damning, but the testimonies must be examined carefully. That's one thing. And second thing, you're surrounded by people who hate you, want to kill you, and there's constant hostility, and you got 18, 19, 20-year-olds. Are there going to be abuses? No question. Israel's not guiltless, but is Israel on the right side of justice in these issues? Absolutely. No question. Thank you for the call.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Friends, we are a resource for you. We are a resource. Nancy and I were talking last night about schedule and things like that, and something I needed to get done just for us. And I said, yeah, I'm going to get to it. I said, but, you know, there's so many deadlines, writing I have. And we were talking about it, you know, how many are self-imposed deadlines. I come up with a new project, I have to finish it. And we were just chatting about it. And I said, but look, so much of what's happening in the world is time sensitive, and God's called me to address it. I'm not the only one, but I'm called to do my part to raise my voice and to be your listener-sponsored voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. So I'm burdened to write. I'm last night I was thinking of writing some more things instead of working on a new book, and I prayed and thought, okay, no, just try to work on the book now, because I feel constantly between radio and writing that I've got to address things and help bring clarity for others that could look to the voice that we have. Again, each of us have our role in the body. So please go to my website, AskDrBrown.org, click on latest article, and as you'll scroll down, you'll see July 23rd, a question for Israel's critics, and then July 16th, hey, Israel's not playing fair. So these are very, very relevant issues. Also go down to July 7th, renouncing Jewish jihad. July 5th, the media condemns Israel again. So we are literally right on top of these critically important issues. 866-348-7884. You've got questions. We've got answers. Let's go to Debbie in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. I just need some advice. Hard to get this out. My daughter's father-in-law is dying of cancer, and he's Jewish. So his mind is a bit closed when it comes to the gospel. I've tried to share with him at other times, but now it seems urgent.
Yeah.
And I need to know what steps to take.
Sure. How old is he?
Today's birthday. He turned 70.
70. And his mind is still clear?
Oh, yes. His mind's clear. His body's wrecked, yeah. But his mind is clear.
Is he a religious Jew or secular Jew?
He's a secular Jew.
Yeah. Well, first, the number one thing you can do is pray as you've been doing and cry out to God to open his eyes and save him and touch him like you would for any other non-believer who is dying, and for the Lord to show him how lost he is. Whatever life he's lived, even if he's helped other people or been a nice guy in many ways, obviously he's still lost in God's sight. He's still sinned and fallen short. And he needs to recognize that. He needs to recognize he's going into eternity. It's all over, and there must be more. And if he's will, is he able to read? Is he in a state where he can read?
Yeah, he's able to read. He's in the final stages of pancreatic cancer, but he is able to read a bit.
Okay. Here's what I want.
Something I could share with him.
Yeah. Now, of course, face to face. And we're going to send you a mini book I have. It actually deals with the question of the Holocaust, but then points to Jesus as the one who suffered for us and through whose death we can have life. And as a Jew, he certainly asked questions about the Holocaust as a 70-year-old man. And this points to Jesus as the one we can relate to, as opposed to being foreign and on the outside. So when we're done, just stay on the air. Dwight will get your mailing address, and we'll send you this mini book on the Holocaust. It's not a long read either, and it'll be an eye-opener for him that Jew died for you, as the cover says. But what I'd encourage you to share with him is, listen, it's not a matter of Jew or Gentile. Jesus himself is a Jew. But explain the concept of sin, that we all fall short, that we often make selfish choices, and do things that are wrong in God's sight. That's the first thing. That we're all going to stand before God. There is a real God. There's more than just this world. Surely, coming to the end of his life, he's got to realize there's more. And that we are going to stand before God, And when he stands before him, he's going to fall short. If God says, okay, here's my perfection, and here's what I expected of your life, he's going to fall infinitely short. You tell him God loves the world that much that he sent his son to die, and his son dying in our place, by dying in our place, all of our sins can be paid for. He can know that he knows that he knows that he'll be with the Lord forever. He can know that he knows that he knows that his sins are forgiven, and that he can leave this world in complete peace and then share your own story with him. But to the extent you can get him to recognize that all of us fall short and that Jesus is the Messiah for Jew and Gentile alike, that, look, he recognizes his need right now. And Debbie, what's his first name?
Mike.
His name is Mike. Yeah, and look, you care enough that just to talk about it brings you to tears. He needs to see that. He needs to see the depth of your love, and even to say, look, who could have known that our families would ever come together? Who could have known that you would be there at the end of his life praying for him? Could this be something God arranged? So the simple gospel message, assurance of forgiveness through Jesus, and how providential it is that God joined you together. And then God could touch him without a book or anything. Obviously, you keep praying in secret. But let's just pray now. And stay right there, Debbie, and Dwight will get your mailing address, and we'll get this sent right out to you. Matt, make sure that we send it out immediately as soon as we get the info. Lord, we pray for Mike that you would have mercy on him, that he's coming to the end of his life, that he might really come to the beginning of life, that suddenly in a moment of time he would recognize how deeply he has sinned against you and how deeply he has grieved you simply by being a rebellious human being, and that the eyes of his understanding would be open to Jesus, the Messiah, who died for him. Bring him to yourself before he leaves this world. Use Debbie in Jesus' name. Amen. 866-34-TRUTH. Life and death. Life and death issues. Let's go to Dover, New Jersey. Joshua, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Brown. It's been a while, maybe a few months, but I'm happy to speak with you again, and I wanted to ask you how everything's going with the program.
Oh, things are going great. Thank God. We are, by God's grace, touching a lot of lives and continue to get amazing reports. So thank you for asking.
Excellent, excellent. I had a question. I have a bunch of questions for you. The first question, I know you only have so much time. One was, for those of us that don't have access to, well, for one financial reason or another, say a rabbinic school or formation that would teach someone or immerse them in Hebrew, biblical Hebrew, modern Hebrew, perhaps both fluency. Have you ever considered putting out an MP3 or audio CD, like a narrated version of the Hebrew Bible that you could do, or someone you know from Israel might be able to do, and just for the sake of literacy, not imposing, but just dispersing biblical literacy. I've noticed that these rabbis, and you know, they respond when you speak to them in Hebrew, even if it's just conversational. They're more attentive than someone coming up to
right.
them, say, in a T-shirt with an English copy of the New Testament.
Yeah, let me say this, Joshua, in all candor, unless you understood what you were quoting and citing, which is years and years of study,
exactly.
and for some many years of study, but unless
exactly.
you really had that, grasped that, understood that, to make reference to something in Hebrew, it's then someone responds based on the Hebrew that wouldn't help you unless you really had that background. So the bigger question would be, what could you read that could give you insight into Jewish understanding of the Hebrew scriptures? And if you simply get the Stone translation of the Old Testament, the Stone translation of Tanakh, that also had, number one, when there is a choice between the plain sense of the Hebrew or a rabbinic nuance that traditional Judaism understands, it will go with the way of the rabbinic nuance. Also, it has footnotes, limited footnotes, but those footnotes also give you understanding of traditional Jewish interpretation where there are differences. The other thing is a three-volume series. The first one was edited by Arya Kaplan, but look it up, The Living Torah, and then it divides for the rest of the Old Testament, or what Jews would call the Tanakh, into two more volumes. And it's a translation also favoring rabbinic tradition, or reflecting, I should say, rabbinic tradition in the main translation, and then concise summary notes of major rabbinic views of all the verses. Those sources will get you very familiar with a lot of information that will help interaction. All right, gotta go, but thank you, sir, for the call.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on this Friday broadcast on The Line of Fire. You've got questions. We've got answers. Kendrick, I had a question about Sodom when the city is being destroyed and it speaks of Lot's wife looking back and becoming a pillar of salt. Did she simply look back as in glance backwards? Does the text say anything beyond that? Thanks, love your show. Hey, thank you for the kind word about the show. Number one, the text says what it says. In other words, it does not say she stopped, she turned back, her thoughts reflected on the city. She thought this, she thought, no, it says what it says. She looked back and they were told not to. But we do gain an insight in the spiritual meaning of this. And that is from the words of Jesus. Jesus is saying, we'll start Luke 17, beginning in verse 28. Likewise, just as it was in the days of Lot, they were eating and drinking, buying and selling, planting and building. But on the day when Lot went out from Sodom, fire and sulfur rained from heaven and destroyed them all. So will it be on the day when the Son of Man is revealed. On that day, let the one who is on the housetop with his goods in the house not come down to take them away. And likewise, let the one who is in the field not turn back. Remember Lot's wife. Whoever seeks to preserve his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life will keep it. In other words, I don't take this to be the looking back of suddenly there's terror or there's fear and you glance back with compassion. What about the people there? No, I take it a looking back of longing or of desire, a looking back of her friends are there, her house is there, her life was there. Oh, you try to save your life, you lose it. You lose your life, you find it. That would be the insight from Luke 17. Let us go to Robert in Riverdale, Maryland. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Thank you, sir. You know, gosh, I listen on the line. I get all these ideas and almost forget what I was going to ask, but you mentioned the name Kaplan. One of the most wonderful people I ever worked for in my life back in the 80s. But anyhow, what I was calling for was I worked at a security company years ago in the 90s, and a friend of mine, he was Jewish, and I can't remember if I've been saved yet or not, but I was right on the borderline, you know. Something, you know, I hadn't, you know, actually happened. But I asked him one time, I said, I can never, because we had pretty open discussions about Judaism and Christianity and stuff like that, because I didn't even know what I believed in. I asked him, well, is Judaism or being Jewish, is that a ethnic group? Is that a... Is that a race? Is it a religion? And he says, all I can say is yes.
actually, the question was the problem. if that's exactly how you asked it, now his answer didn't necessarily help you. Judaism is a religion. Okay. Judaism, just like
maybe
Islam, just like Christianity, Judaism is a religion. Now, there are various branches of Judaism that look very, very different. The difference between Reform Judaism and ultra-Orthodox Judaism is night and day. But Judaism is a religion. Does someone practice Judaism? So that would mean certain things and would have certain observances with it and certain beliefs that go with it. To say being Jewish is ethnic. Now, it can intersect with religious practice, but you can be a Jewish atheist. You can be a religious Jew or a non-religious Jew. I am a Jewish follower of Jesus. So being Jewish is ethnic, but because it does tie in with a spiritual calling in God, because the Jewish people were chosen for a certain purpose in God, even though it is ethnic, it does include potentially something larger.
So someone could say, if I could go back again, I guess I really, I wasn't prepared for asking the question. But maybe he wasn't prepared to answer. But
yeah, probably.
May have
so you're right.
Correctly.
The question would be right. The question would be: is being Jewish a matter of race, religion, or both? And it is a matter of race. It has a religious dimension, so that you could say, are you an observant Jew or not? Meaning, do you practice Judaism? If I said, are you an observant Arab or not, what would that mean? Arab does not necessarily mean Muslim. So there's some intersection, which is why there can be lack of clarity. And someone can become Jewish by converting to Judaism. So even though they haven't changed ethnically, they now are considered a Jew in Jewish law if they went through a legitimate conversion, and then their children would be considered Jewish. So
at the time, I guess I asked a much bigger question.
You did. But bear in mind, let me just say this, Robert.
Yes, sir.
It's one that's actively discussed in the Jewish world. Who is a Jew? For example, Reform Jews say if your mother or father are Jewish, you're a Jew. Orthodox Jews say you're only Jewish if your mother was Jewish. And then again, as I said, someone can convert to Judaism and they become a Jew, even though there are Jews who are non-religious. So fundamentally, race, ethnicity, but there is a religious dimension and they do intersect. So the ambiguity of your question reflects the wideness of the answer. By the way, my book, 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices, 60 questions Christians ask about Jewish beliefs and practices, you'll find very helpful on this subject. And also my website has a ton of material, AskDrBrown.org, that's relevant. And very soon we are going to be launching the complete and total revamped website, Real Messiah. We have an active Real Messiah website now with lots of Jewish resources, but we've recorded a ton of new videos, lots of new audio material, lots of material in English with Hebrew captions, and on and on. So we're really excited to be releasing that soon. Hey, now's a good time to call, and you can stick around on the phone, and I'll take your call right as we get into the next hour. So 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. If you get in now, we'll get your call early in the next hour. Let me thank you for your prayer support. Let me thank you for your many words of encouragement. I am thrilled and full of joy to be doing what God's called me to do, to be on the radio with you daily, to be writing day and night and putting out truth to fight against propaganda. And I deeply appreciate your prayer support, your words of encouragement, your one-time donations, and thank you personally from the heart, all of you torchbearers, all of you who are monthly supporters standing with us with your monthly help. It carries us, it sustains us, it takes pressure off of us, and it enables us not just to help our missionaries around the world, not just to reach Jewish people with the gospel, not just to contend for moral and cultural Jesus-based revolution in America, not just to help spark revival in the church, but it helps to amplify our voice. Why not become a torchbearer today if you've been blessed by the broadcast? Partner with us. You say, well, I get like a brand new car if I do this. No, I'll tell you, you'll get treasure in heaven if you do this because you'll be partnering with us to reach many people. Call now 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, AskDrBrown.org, click on donate. My bottom line today, I do not expect things to calm down much in the world in the coming days, but I expect constant peace in God's presence. Well, how about a one-state solution for the Israelis and the Palestinians? Why does it have to be a two-state solution?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-348-7884. Normally on Fridays, you've got questions, we've got answers. We discourage Jewish-related questions or Israel-related questions because we cover those on Thoroughly Jewish Thursdays. But in light of what's happening in the Middle East, in light of the guest I had on yesterday, Reverend Alex Awad, Palestinian Christian, who has many concepts that I fully agree with and many others, an understanding of history that I deeply differ with. You may have follow-up questions. You may agree with Reverend Awad and want to challenge me. So I will take Israel-related questions on the air today, even though I normally don't on a Friday. 866-348-7884. Anything I can help you with, any area of expertise that I have, anything where my background in biblical languages or theology or scripture or practical ministry or moral cultural issues can be of help to you, give me a call. Again, if you're new to the show, let's say you're in the midst of a controversy in your local church and there's almost a split about to happen. You don't need to say, I go to such and such church and pastor so-and-so. No, no, just talk about the conflict. This way you can talk freely. Because, see, I want to be fair. Let's say that you were going to the church and you got burned by somebody. Somebody really let you down and mistreated you. I mean, they really mistreated you. But that's left you a little bitter towards the church. Now you're going to call in and say, well, I was going to such church where Pastor so-and-so does this. And somebody, well, maybe a church of 5,000 people, and you may have had one bad apple that mistreated you. I don't want the whole church to get a bad name over that. And I don't want to make it about personalities and individuals. Now, if you saw something on national TV, I was on national TV addressing an issue, or Rick Warren or Joel Osteen were on national TV, and they said thus and such, and you want to call and say, I saw thus and such, and I want you to comment on it. Okay, that's a public thing already. Or if you're listening to Christian radio, and you hear somebody say something on the air, and you think, what? I don't believe that. That's not right. That's fine. These are public statements that are being made. We can talk about those freely. But I'm always jealous to protect individuals, to protect churches. And look, just picture if you could call up and say, well, my wife, her name is Sue. And let me just tell you, Sue Black, I'm brown, so Sue Black, let me just tell you, she was really nasty to me last night, and she got so mad, she started using profanity, and she claims to be a Christian, so why should I? No, you could just say, hey, I'm having an issue with my wife without mentioning names. So we'll talk about everything we can as freely as we can and protect privacy as much as possible. I wanted to do this in the first hour, and I didn't get to, so I really want to do this in the second hour, namely, read Hamas's letter of thanksgiving to the media. Oh, it's a sarcastic but very eye-opening and accurate letter that was published in a Jewish journal, online journal, in the last 24 hours, I believe. Okay, going to get right to your calls, 866-34-TRUTH. But I spotted this stat or this item in Town Hall magazine. Unnecessary law of the month. I know this is random, but I was looking for a random moment to bring it in. Note this carefully, Joey. Unnecessary law of the month. In Connecticut, it's unlawful to ride a bike faster than 65 miles per hour. So, Joey, just in case you're riding in Connecticut. Now, that may apply to James White. My friend Dr. White is a cyclist, and he does a tremendous amount of study listening to audio as he cycles. His mind is sharp enough that he can listen and make mental notes and so on. So maybe when he's going down a hill somewhere in Arizona, he can hit that speed. But that's the law. Joey, be careful. Ride the bike in Connecticut. Don't go over 65 miles an hour.
Fire we want, for fire we please.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. On this Friday, you've got questions, we've got answers. Just before going to the phones, last hour a caller asked me about the book, Our Harsh Logic, which compiles testimonies from a group called Breaking the Silence, an organization of former soldiers who use personal experience to illustrate what they perceive to be the folly of Israel's policies in the Palestinian territories. This is as described by Amos Harel in Haaretz.com, by the way, a very liberal Israeli newspaper. And Israelis are very sensitive to criticism of injustice on their end. What I mean is they're not just sensitive, meaning they don't like to hear it. They look into it. There have been large rallies in Israel with massive crowds when they felt that Israel treated others unjustly or led the way to suffering of others. There's a lot of internal criticism within Israel. So this is a book, Our Harsh Logic, I was asked about it, that would seem to be very damning in terms of the Israelis. And look, they're telling you themselves, a few years back, they're telling you themselves how wrong the policy is in Gaza and so on. Actually, if you want an extraordinarily unbalanced report, an extraordinarily slanted report that will give false impressions and take the very worst example and make it the norm, that would be a book to look at. If you want truth, wouldn't go there. So Amos Harel in Haaretz says, Breaking the Silence, this is the organization behind this, has a clear political agenda and can no longer be classed as a human rights organization, an organization whose website includes the claim by members to expose the corruption which permeates the military system, is not a neutral observer. The organization has a clear agenda to expose the consequences of IDF troops serving in the West Bank and Gaza. This seems more of interest to its members than seeking justice for specific injustices. And honestreporting.ca notes the IDF has accused Breaking the Silence of conducting a deliberate smear campaign. Barak Raz, spokesman for the IDF's Judean Samaria division, criticized BTS for not bothering to consult with the IDF or ask for its response before publishing its reports and for not revealing the identity of its sources. So, of course, you're going to have people who are disoriented. And, of course, within Israel, you're going to have those who are critical of any war effort that brings hardship on the Palestinians. Absolutely. And, for sure, Israel is not guiltless. But as I've said repeatedly, Israel perpetually goes out of its way to avoid civilian casualties. You say, what about they bombed, though? I mean, Israel intentionally bombed a UN school where thousands of Palestinians had taken refuge to get out of the fighting, women and children. Oh, it's a terrible tragedy. Nancy and I were looking at footage. She wanted me to see some of the footage. It's horrific. What, 15, 16 children killed and 200 people injured? It's absolutely horrific. What we don't know first is whose rockets or fire caused the damage. There are reports that there were Hamas rockets that were going astray that fell in that area. Could have been Hamas rockets. Also, Israel claims that they were constantly trying to evacuate that area because they were being shot at by the Palestinians from that area, and that Hamas would not allow the evacuation to take place. Israel is adamant on that claim, and that they did respond to fire from that area. Again, to protect their own lives, they responded, and it's possible that there was errant fire from them that hit the school. It's tragic. It's horrific. I can't imagine the trauma. And obviously, it's going to create more hatred towards Israel among the Palestinians. What we have to step back and realize is Hamas started this. Hamas has done this intentionally to endanger its own people in a PR campaign against Israel. And atrocities, terrible things like what happened yesterday, not only the fault of Hamas, this is something now that I personally believe they were looking for. They would gladly sacrifice some of their people in the media campaign against Israel. Let's also remember that had these tunnels, several dozen tunnels found so far, not been discovered. I mean, you're talking about large structures. And it's shocking to me with all of his Israeli intelligence that they were not aware of all of these tunnels. They're discovering more and more of them, dozens of them. That these, the whole plan was to have hundreds of terrorists at the same time be able to infiltrate Israel into the kibbutzim and other places and kidnap, kill. Some are speculating it could have been the worst terrorist attack of any kind anywhere in history. And this is part of what has been planned. These tunnels were not for children to play underground or for Hamas to come over to Israel and say, hey, we just brought you some fruit. It's to kill and kidnap and inflict terror. So let's just look at the larger context while we grieve over the loss of individual life. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to the Bronx. Trevor, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. Brown. Yes, I enjoy your ministry. It's wonderful. I just like to say I'm a great supporter of Israel. And not long ago, the Lord told me to write a letter of support to Israel. So I did that. And I sent one to the Knesset and one to the president and one to the prime minister, their office.
Well, so good for you. Thank you for doing that.
Yes. Okay. Yes. This recently came up. Jesus says it is he that endured to the end that shall be saved. Yet we ask people if they are saved, and people ask us if we are saved, and we say yes. Yet we believe it is he that endured to the end that shall be saved. Could you give some clarity on that? What are
yes.
we saved from right now? Mm-hmm.
Yes. And first, Trevor, thank you for the very kind words. Much appreciated, and for your support for Israel. Number one, in the context of Matthew 24, it is talking about a time of great suffering, persecution, hardship, not just walking with the Lord over a period of years. So In that sense, those who persevere to the end, who do not deny the Lord and who are faithful, obviously they will ultimately be saved by God. But on the larger level, here's what the New Testament tells us. It guarantees us safety, preservation in the Lord. I don't mean we won't have trouble, but I mean he will finish what he started. It guarantees that, to use my analogy, if we get in that plane will safely take us from one destination to the next. No one can pluck us out of his hand, and he who began the good work will bring it to completion. Jesus is the author and finisher of our faith. That's one truth. The parallel truth is that we must continue to put our trust in the Lord. Colossians 1 says that God will present us faultless on that day if we continue in the faith. That's Colossians 1. Or Hebrews 3, that it's those who partake in faith until the end who are saved.
Right.
So I could theoretically, to use my analogy, no longer trust the plane, no longer trust the pilot, and try to open the emergency door and jump out. I could theoretically do that. However, if I continue in my place of trust, God will carry me through. So I look at them as parallel truths, but different settings in terms of their application. Hey, Trevor, thanks again for the call, and may the smile of the Lord be yours. Let me try to grab one more call, 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Bilal in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
How are you doing today, Dr. Brown?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Just wanted to say thank you so much for everything that you've been doing. I've been keeping a close eye on your ministry, and it's been a real blessing to me and to a lot of others. So just thank you so much for your work.
Well, my joy, and thank you for sharing that.
I had a question. I wanted to, if you will, get your thoughts on this. So my plans, I plan to go to school to learn the biblical languages, somewhat like you did. So the track that I really want to take is I want to learn Greek, and I really want to learn Hebrew.
Yep.
Just wanting to know, though, it's about, I want to say, another year out before I get to school. Wanted to know if there's any books or anything like that that you would recommend that I could maybe buy for Biblical Hebrew?
To get you jump started before you do. All right, tell you what, we got a break coming up. As soon as we come back, I'll recommend something. But let me just say this in general. Initially, especially in advance of getting into school, focus on one language, not two. I once took six languages at the same time in college, and it wasn't the healthiest way to do things. You want to lay good foundations first. So either get a jump start on Hebrew or Greek, and then once you're in school, best to really concentrate on one while working with the other. But I'll give you a recommendation when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on, I was going to say Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, on Friday. You've got questions, we've got answers, 866-34-TRUTH. But normally we ask folks if they have Jewish-related or Israel-related questions to call on Thursday, but because of so much happening in Israel today, and because the guests I had on yesterday, I wanted to give you an opportunity to follow up with calls today that are Israel-related. 866-34-TRUTH. Bilal in Milwaukee. When I was in college, they only had modern Hebrew. So I taught myself Biblical Hebrew, and I used a book that's still in print. But in retrospect, I understand that the book was a little more complex than might be helpful. There's a book that's a few years old now, so it's one of the newer ones, by Brian Webster, W-E-B-S-T-E-R. It's called The Cambridge Introduction to Biblical Hebrew, and it comes with a CD. The Cambridge Introduction to Biblical Hebrew, and it comes along with a CD. It's not cheap, but it would be a good resource. Also, if you just check online, go to Amazon.com or something, and check on Intro to Biblical Hebrew, you'll see a number of options. And sometimes by reading the reviews, you can see what's more conducive. But this one from, I haven't used this personally, but based on the reviews and the background to it, it seems to be good both for someone in a first year class and for someone who wants to learn on their own. And because it's got the CD, the interactive CD, that makes it really helpful. And then one other principle in learning a language, Bilal, is a little a lot is the good policy. In other words, if you just keep working at it every day, every day, every day, and once you learn a little bit, start reading in Hebrew or reading in Greek, a few minutes every day. Obviously, hours and hours of study is great, but rather than putting in 3 or 4 hours one day and neglecting it the rest of the week, little a lot. Just keep staying with it, keep reading in it. It'll become more and more familiar, and then at a certain point, you kind of get over the learning hump. Hey, God bless you, and thank you for the call.
Thank you so much for your help. You're
very welcome. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go back to the calls, and I've got some very, very important questions to tackle, some of your phone calls and some of the emails. Listen to this one from Lorene. Matt, this really got my attention. I'm a Christian from the West Bank, Dr. Brown. I saw your lecture, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? And it really got me thinking. It had much information that they don't teach us in history books at schools and universities here. I'm grateful I saw it. Things are starting to make more sense. My question for you is, what do you have to say for Christians living in the land of Palestine? What is your position in the middle of all this? We're caught up in two fires. Hope you answer my question. Thanks a lot. God bless. Well, you actually, Lorene, used the very term that my guest, Reverend Alex Awad, used yesterday. He said there are the two fires of radical Islam and radical Zionism. Now, with all respect to my colleague, Reverend Awad, what he calls radical Zionism, I would simply call Zionism. Again, we have a different perspective, but that's why I asked him on the air to share the perspective of a Palestinian Christian. And at some point, I'll interact in more detail with some of the references that he made, just to give my perspective more clearly, but that was not the point yesterday, and I didn't want it to be a debate of any kind. But Lorene, first, it blesses me that you took the time to watch that. It blesses me that you realize that you were not told the whole story and that there were some perspectives that were one-sided in what you heard. The first thing I'd encourage you to do is to recognize that in many cases, even though you may have good intentions and sentiments, that your leadership may not. In other words, that the Palestinian Authority or the short-lived unity government with Hamas, I mean, there's too much pressure for that to endure because of Hamas's radical stance, that they may not have your best interests in mind because of their radical views. That's one thing. The second thing is to ask God for a heart of compassion for the Israelis who need Jesus just as much as the Palestinian Muslims do. So to ask God for a heart of compassion, and if you feel they've sinned against you, or if firsthand you've been mistreated by Israelis or suffered on some level because of them, forgive them from the heart just as God has forgiven you. It will release you. It will free you. And then see if there's a way to interact with Jewish believers in Israel and get to know them. Get to know them firsthand so that there can be a spirit of reconciliation, that you can learn from each other, that you can share life with one another. And if you travel over to Israel and you're able to interact, or you just want to get to know some folks on Facebook or things like that, why don't you do it? In fact, my friend Ron Cantor, roncantor.com, roncantor.com. If you connect with Ron, you'll get the perspective from a Messianic Jew in Israel. And Ron is accessible. He'd love to interact with folks who have an open heart. But first, again, search your own heart. Because where there's bitterness, where there's unforgiveness, where there's unresolved anger, that is going to produce a skewed perspective. And if you forgive from the heart perceived or real offenses, you'll have a lot more freedom. Those are some things that I would suggest on a basic level. And let your first allegiance be to Jesus, not to a land and not to a people. Let your first allegiance be to Jesus, not to a land and not to a people, if that makes sense to you. But thank you so much for watching and for realizing there's a lot more to the story. And you know, just realize also that Israelis don't like sending all their kids into war. They'd rather not do that. Every man and woman has to fight in the military, with some exceptions for religious Jews. They don't like having to do that any more than you'd like going into war or sending your kids to battle. And think of living with people around them that say, we want to kill you. We want to kill you. So if you can start with that context, and then Israelis are far from perfect. They're all fellow sinners that need the Lord. I think that would help a lot. Let me know if this is helpful to you, Lorene. All right? I do hope it is. What's the video she's talking about? She's talking about, is Israel an evil occupier? It's a lecture I did at the University of South Florida. You'll find it tremendously helpful and eye-opening. If it was eye-opening for a Palestinian Christian, how much more eye-opening will it be just for someone who has even less exposure and has heard perhaps propaganda from a distance? The video, along with two debate videos on the identity of Israel and ethics in Israel and the promises to Israel, are they future? Are they past? Are they both? You'll find these resources very, very helpful, eye-opening for private use or congregational use. And they're just $25 postage paid for all of them, so a savings of about $20 on top of it. If you can help with a larger gift, wonderful. But please take advantage of this. $25 postage paid, all three DVDs. Call now 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Or go to my website, askdrbrown.org. Right on the homepage, you can order. We will be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the line of fire, 866-348-7884. You've got questions, we've got answers. Let me go straight to the phones in Greensboro, North Carolina. Daniel, welcome to the line of fire.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for taking my call. I just had a thought, a couple of thoughts on the Israeli issues. First of all, what does the American public think, or why aren't they thinking? What did we do when we dropped bombs on Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and saved literally thousands and thousands of lives and stopped the war? In other words, we didn't start the war in Pearl Harbor, but this did stop the war. Hello?
Yeah, in point of fact, if you look at what we did, the extreme nature of what we did, the phenomenal, extraordinary, unbelievable loss of civilian life to basically put that conflict to an end. Now, obviously, most Americans alive today were not alive when that happened, and many Americans would have deeply, deeply mixed feelings about that today. Yeah, but the idea, let's get more recent, Daniel. But first, yeah, the idea that the America that could do that in World War II and feel it was justified, that anyone could then turn around and fault Israel, which is having its own people killed as they're trying to kill terrorists and as they continue to exert massive efforts to preserve the lives of civilians, that anyone could dare fault them after being bombed day and night, thousands and thousands and thousands of rockets. I posted a video on Facebook this morning, which shows 15 seconds and what happens and how that's all that the people living on the border near Gaza have when bombs start coming in to get to a bomb shelter. It's an unbelievable situation. Many of the kids who've been raised in that are suffering all types of serious traumas because this has been life for them. So, and when you have Hamas digging tunnels under Israel with the goal, obviously, of committing terrorist atrocities, and now Israel, in most of the casualties, a lot of the fighting is taking place trying to get to these tunnels and discover them and destroy them. That anyone could fault Israel in the midst of this is a complete double standard. But, Daniel, if we get more recent than that, if we look at the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, I looked at stats in terms of civilian casualties because of our war in Iraq. We had a ton less justification, even for all who feel it was a right step to take. We had a ton less justification for going into Iraq than Israel has had to go into Gaza. On a scale of 1 to 100, if we had a 2, Israel has 100 in terms of a right to invade. And yet the civilian casualties in Iraq, massively, 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 disproportionately more in terms of overall number than what has happened in Gaza. They're all tragic, we agree. But we did that and say it happens with war. It's a terrible consequence, but it's something that's unavoidable. Oh, it's unavoidable with everyone except Israel. Civilian casualties are unavoidable in wars, except when Israel is the one involved in defending itself. Daniel, thank you for the call. I do appreciate it.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, just a little news item on the lighter side here for a moment. There was an actor who played a vampire, and he was involved with female character, then found out that he was going to be involved with a male character. And because of that, his name is Nelson Ellis, in the, series, True Blood, some vampire series. According to the reports, he quit because he didn't want to play a gay vampire. So he was okay playing a straight vampire, but didn't know that he was going to be playing a gay vampire and thus quit. Well, listen, I'm glad that he said, I have a problem playing a part that I'm not comfortable with, playing the part of a gay man. I think it's a little bit bizarre. And then he was at home playing the part of a straight vampire, probably involved in sexual scenes or whatever. I don't know. I haven't seen it. Just wondering. Anyway, that just a little news item. 866-348-7884. Let's go to Brent in. We won't go there. Let's go to Charlotte, North Carolina. Ken, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Oh, hello, doctor.
Hello.
When I was going to Jonathan Kahn's church, I had been flying, and I was selling my headgear, and I happened to be selling it to an IDF ex-fighter pilot. So as we were talking, I said, is it true that it's easy for citizens there to get guns and arms? He said, oh, yes. And he said, as a matter of fact, let me ask you something. In Israel, if you have children in the house and you do not have a weapon, you're considered irresponsible. He says, we don't understand why, if you have children in your house, you wouldn't want to have something to protect them. I mean, you call 911 and the police come to mop up the mess. And I said, I agree with you. And now, you know, I'm living here in North Carolina and I carry an open carry state. I don't ever expect to need it. I'm just enjoying the Second Amendment right while we're still allowed to have it. But it was a very interesting, but I heard recently that the Knesset introduced legislation for some kind of gun control. And I said, I mean, well, what are your feelings about that? I mean, it's, how do people defend themselves without?
Yeah. All right. It's the larger question. I'm very much ignorant of gun control laws in Israel, to be honest. Something I just haven't followed, and I haven't gotten actively involved in the debate here in America. On the one hand, I'm aware of certain stats that most of the massacres, the horrific outbreaks of violence in America take place in gun-free zones. So it's those who break the law, and you don't have a citizen there who's armed who can stop them, where most of the atrocities take place, and that it appears places like that are targeted. And I just saw a report, didn't read it in detail. Was it Detroit where they were saying that they've seen that people, citizens having guns has actually brought about a reduction in crime, et cetera. So, I've seen those things. On the other hand, myself, this is something I haven't been at home with in my own life. A lot of this is background and what you grow up with. What I would say is this, though, Ken, and one day, I've never had a big gun control debate on the air, but one day I'm going to do it. I just want to say this. At times when Israel has been under its worst pressure, and say in the Second Intifada, for example, where hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Israelis were slaughtered, or suicide bombers, and that's why the security barrier was put up, in large part to keep the murderers out, directly related to that intifada, and it's been done with great success. But one of my friends was with a Messianic Jewish couple, and they were explaining how they have to live, and this was with waves of terror coming against them, that, for example, they would either go out individually and one would stay with the kids, or they would all go out as a family. But the husband and wife were very reluctant to go out at the same time without the kids. Why? They were afraid that they might both get killed by terrorists. So that they felt as long as the children had one parent, that it would be much easier to survive than by losing both parents at the same time. That's how difficult life was. And it's not that long ago. We're just supposed to, oh, well, that was what, like 10 years ago? Oh, that all the memories just go away. And the same people that wanted to murder you, they can't murder you. The murderers can't get in. I'm not saying all the Palestinians are murderers, God forbid. But the murderers can't get in because you put up a security barrier. And now it's just a few years later. Oh, everybody's just going to be happy neighbors. That's a problem. All right. Thank you for the call. In fact, let me go to this question from Dina. And Dina asked this. For years, there has been talk of a two-state solution to bring peace between the Jews and Palestinians. Why not a one-state solution? Both groups live in the same country. Also, I've heard that Palestinians and Israeli Arabs don't have the same citizenship rights and voting rights as Jews. Is this true, or have I heard wrongly? If this is true, why is there separation of rights between the groups? As far as Israeli Arabs, those who are living in what everyone agrees right now is the land of Israel. Forget border disputes. Just right now, everyone recognizes, okay, this is Israel. The Israeli Arabs who live there have full rights as citizens. Full rights. When the state of Israel was declared in 1948, there were about 200,000 Arabs living in the land. The rest had fled or were displaced by the war. And by the way, the first ones that fled were wealthy Arab families, according to my understanding, who simply did not want to be in the midst of a war, as the surrounding Arab nations said, we're going to attack. And then many fled because Arab leadership said, a cannon cannot distinguish between a Jew and an Arab. Get out, and once we drive the Jews into the sea, then go back to your homes and your places to live. And the Israeli leadership was saying, stay. We are neighbors. We can live together and work together in the land. Only 200,000 stayed. And others fled because of war and because of Israel in the midst of war, fighting the surrounding nations as a brand new nation without all the sophisticated military it needs. It lost about 1% of its population. This is not long after the Holocaust. Yes, there were aggressive attacks as well. It's in the midst of war. Agreed. But it was not initiated or started by Israel. So, and as my guest yesterday, Palestinian Christian, eloquent Palestinian Christian presenting his viewpoint, said, yeah, the Arab nations did not accept the partition plan because it was a bad deal. All right, well, you now respond to the bad deal with an all-out attack to try to annihilate the Jews? That's what the Arab leadership was saying. In any case, 200,000 remained. That 200,000 is now 1.5 million, actually over 1.5 million. And they have full rights as citizens. And they vote. In fact, 10% of the Israeli Knesset, the Israeli parliament, is Arab-Israeli. And if they all voted just as a bloc, just for Arab-Israeli candidates, they could have a higher percentage. But they have 10%. One of the members of the Israeli Supreme Court is Arab-Israeli. And sure, I'm sure there's some tension in certain places and some places where there's discrimination. But one of the neatest things that I saw was a reality TV show, Israeli reality TV show, where they said, let's just see public sentiment in general. Let's just look at public sentiment. And they went into like convenience store at a gas station or something like that. And an Arab came in, clearly an Arab, and wanted coffee, and the owner said, I don't serve coffee to Arabs. And the Israelis, they were outraged. What do you mean? You sell it to me. I'm going to buy it, and I'll give it to her or to him. No, I'm never coming to your store again. And there is outrage over that. Why? Because they're fellow human beings. Do we have some racial tension in America? Yeah, true. We do. And do we have equality? I mean, citizens can vote and do this and that. Yeah, people can. So full citizenship. Absolutely. And in fact, the Israeli Arabs, from the polling I've heard or the feedback I've heard, they don't want to live under the Palestinian Authority or Hamas. All right. Carolyn Glick has written the book, One State Solution. I strongly encourage you to get that book. Caroline Glick, One State Solution. She said, two-state solution will never work, impossible, cannot work for many, many reasons. So let's have a one-state solution. Well, how can it be a Jewish nation? Well, the idea of a Jewish nation or Jewish state was that there would be a Jewish majority. That was the concept. That's what Ben-Gurion and others emphasized. It simply needs a consistent Jewish majority. Let everyone come together. Let there be one state. Some say exclude Gaza. Let them have their own place because it's just not going to work. And then a one-state solution. I don't know how that could work. I'd love to see it happen in many ways. I don't know how. And are the Palestinians going to sing Hatikva, the Israeli national anthem?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Before I go back to the phones, very quickly, this was published on the Allgemeiner Journal. It is sarcastic but powerful. A letter of thanks from Hamas to the international media. Dear members of the mainstream media, you've been awesome. Everyone knows that we start unwinnable wars with Israel because the real victory happens when you predictably side with us each time, and you've been so supportive of our strategy that we really want to acknowledge your helpfulness. In particular, we thank you for focusing so much more on our suffering than anyone else's. Nigerians must die in far greater numbers before you take notice, so we're glad that you value our lives so much more. Minimizing your coverage, if any, of our attacks that led up to Israel's military response and generally providing so little context that outsiders think that Israelis kill Palestinians just for fun. Emphasizing our civilian death toll without explaining that our casualty reports are hasty and inflated. And we maximize that total by using Palestinians to shield our weapons and by urging them to stay in the very areas that the IDF, in its annoying effort to minimize our civilian deaths, warns Gazans to evacuate. Never mentioning the fact that if we could kill millions of Israelis, we would. After all, our charter calls for Israel's destruction. Never calling us jihadists, even though we persecute Christians like the ISIS, which just compelled Mosul's Christians to convert to Islam. Downplaying how bad we are for Gazans by not reporting on, for example, our attack on the very Israeli power station that provides electricity to 70,000 Gazans. Minimally reporting our corruption, unfair wealth, or vast expenditures on tunnels to attack Israel while ordinary Palestinians grew poorer. Overlooking how, to maximize Palestinian deaths, we store missiles in a UNWRA-run school, and how, when UNWRA finds out, they just hand us back our missiles. Disregarding Arabs who have the courage to critique us, like Dr. Tawfiq Hamid, an Islamist-turned reformer who blames Palestinian suffering entirely on us. Ignoring Israelis' humanitarian folly and providing medical aid to the very terrorists trying to kill them. Failing to acknowledge Israel's immense restraint. Had we been fighting Syria's Assad regime, by now Gaza would have been flattened. Omitting how Israel chose to sacrifice dozens of IDF soldiers when destroying our tunnels and weapons in densely populated areas like Shajaya, because doing so with airstrikes, which risked no soldiers, would have killed many thousands of Palestinians. Not sharing with your English readers what we openly say in Arabic, that we view any truce as just an opportunity to rearm for our next war against Israel. Not underscoring that Israel can do nothing to make peace with us. Not reminding readers when you mention potential truce arrangements that world powers are no more capable of ensuring a demilitarized Gaza than they were capable of disarming Hezbollah in South Lebanon. There's more to the letter. I gave you all the main points, but I didn't read every point of it. And by the way, I say it's totally accurate in what it's saying. Absolutely. And yes, Matt, I agree. It's actually an understatement of much of the press in the Muslim world. A vast understatement. Press TV and others. Absolutely. Agreed with that. All right. To the phones. Brenda in High Point, North Carolina. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown, I wanted to ask you if you are familiar with the scripture that talks about if a person is a really authentic Christian, but then because of things that happen, they get out of God's will for a long time, and you try to tell them, and they won't listen. And there's somewhere in the Bible that it says that he will take you out of here before he'll let you go to hell. Are you familiar with that?
I think you're paraphrasing a couple of verses, but this would be the gist of it. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5, now there is a verse, by the way, in the book of Isaiah that talks about the righteous being taken out before calamity, but that's talking about a godly person in a generation, and all hell is about to break loose on that generation, so God mercifully takes that righteous person out before so they don't have to suffer all those things. But I believe you're thinking of 1 Corinthians chapter 5, and the text there is talking about someone who claims to be a follower of Jesus and is living in persistent, willful, unrepentant sin. So in other words, they will not repent. They will not turn from this. Let's say a man has left his wife. He's living with another woman. He's still claiming to follow Jesus. He's going to church with this other woman. People reach out to him. They call him to repent. He refuses to repent. He goes on in stubborn sin. Paul tells the believers in Corinth to turn that person over to Satan for the destruction of his flesh, that his spirit may be saved, meaning the hope would be that as he is turned over to Satan for destruction, obviously in a state like that with everything going wrong, perhaps he gets terribly ill physically or other calamities hit him, the type of stuff that Satan wants to do, that hopefully he will have an awakening of conscience and will ask the Lord for mercy and forgiveness. And if he dies prematurely, at least he'll die a believer. So for the destruction of the flesh, meaning not the sinful nature, but his human body, Satan destroying him with the hope, though, that his spirit would be saved. And I did see a case one time. It's not the same thing, but there was a kid that had known the Lord and then would walk away and come back and walk away and come back and then really mess up. I mean, really get involved in ugly, self-destructive sin and then come back to the Lord. And his family and church, they were desperately praying for him. He came back to the Lord and shortly after that died in a car crash. And people said, you know, we think that was mercy. So it's a little different situation. But they said, you know, we think that was mercy because he was right with God and he died. And, you know, he messed up so terribly and could have messed up other people when he fell into sin that it could be mercy that he died young in a right relationship with the Lord. But again, 1 Corinthians 5, I think, is the passage that you're talking about. And sometimes it could be mercy that calamity comes into someone's life, even brought by Satan himself, but that calamity causes them to turn to the Lord and repent, so that even though they die prematurely in this world, they'll be with the Lord forever. Thank you for the call. We are out of time, but I do have time to tell you about this. If you missed it, a little earlier this hour, I shared a letter from a Palestinian Christian woman who watched my DVD, Is Israel an Evil Occupier? And it was eye-opening for her, because she had not learned some of the history, some of these facts, some of this information in the schools and universities that she had attended or was familiar with. It's so important to get the truth out now, and this video will help you to do it. You watch it in your home. It's called Is Israel an Evil Occupier? You can watch it in a home Bible study or show it for your whole church. You have every legal right when you have it to broadcast it for your whole congregation to watch together. A lecture I did at University of South Florida, and then two debates on the identity of Israel and promises to Israel and Israel and future prophecy. Three DVDs, retail value, I don't know, somewhere in the 40s with postage, but yours, $25, postage paid, all three DVDs. Get multiple sets. Give them out to your friends. We've got to triumph with the truth at this time. Here's the number to call, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Or go to my website, askdrbrown.org. My bottom line today, expect increasing pressure from every side. Expect more grace from a consistent, loving God.